Just by way of introduction, who has heard the name Rabbi Chaim Amsalem? You know who that is?
The news.
Right, it's in the news today.
Yeah.
Right, it's big time in the news. Why is it big time in the news? Because Rabbi Amsalem did what nobody dares to do. What?
Who brought down source materials.
Wait, he is the member of Knesset. I don't want to get too much into politics, but I'm just using it as an illustration. He's a member of Knesset that had the gall to go against the party line.
Saying that it's okay to work.
Yeah, saying that, yeah.
Not only that it's okay to work, but it is expected that as a Talmud Chacham that you should, part of your time should be spent working.
Correct.
So that you are not looked at as...
Yeah, he did. This is a very dangerous tangent you can get into. I raised this because he was then instructed by Rabbi Ovadia Yosef to quit. And he said to Rabbi Ovadia, no. Right, which is, I think, like almost shocking. Because when you're in Shas, you're not allowed to do that. You have a Rav, and the Rav tells you what to do, and that's what you do. Right. You know, and whether we subscribe to it or not, that's the system in which he bought into. And I personally, to be honest with you, have a problem with it. His Rav told him to do something. That's, you know, like, you can't all of a sudden change your mind in the middle. And the reason I bring this up is because, and that's, not to say I don't agree with Rav Amsalem, I agree with everything he said about this particular issue. But, you are in a system, you have to be devoted to that system. And of course the reason I bring this up is because that is one of the subtexts of what Im HaBanim Smeicha is all about. We were discussing this before the introduction. And, it is a book, Im HaBanim Smeicha, is written by Rabbi Yisachar Dov Teichtal. Okay. Rav Teichtal. Rav Yisachar Shlomo Teichtal. You can just look at the picture in the beginning of the book. Right? Rav Teichtal was, the real deal. He was Haredi through and through. Not only Haredi through and through, he was well known. He was a very, very well known speaker. He was a Darshan, he was a Talmud Chacham, he was a Rosh Yeshiva. He was well known in Hasidic circles as, one of the Bechirim, one of the, Yechidei Skula. It's not even like Rav Amsalem, because Rav Amsalem, nobody heard of him before. Right. He's like way down on the list somewhere, whatever number he was. Like, Rav Teichtal was huge. And what Rav Teichtal did was, for whatever reason, and we're going to get into the reason, he committed religious heresy. Right? Because he took a core tenet of what Satmar Judaism is all about, and he said that it's wrong. Not only did he say it's wrong, he's going to go extremely strongly against the ideology that he was raised in, and that he promoted, and that he himself taught, until, of course, along came Nazi Germany and wiped out most of European Jewry. Which kind of made him rethink his positions on things. But nonetheless, just the idea of being, to such a degree, a heretic. Anybody read any of the stuff going on about it? Did you read the stuff about Rabbi Amsalem? Did you read it? You have to read the Hebrew press.
I haven't read the Hebrew press. I've read the English press. But he quoted, this was not his opinion. His opinion was based on halachic authorities of previous
100%,
generations. 100%. And that Rabbi Yosef hold of.
I'm more interested in what they write. You read what they wrote about him in the Shas newspaper.
They compared him, right?
No, it's not that they lambasted him. They compared him to Amalek. And they said he's no longer a Rav. And they said, Oto ish sofo ye kamo elu. His end will be like those who uproot Judaism. Literally, it's like you have committed heresy, and you are written out. But you have to, and I reason I, what? He will not be getting Maftir Yonah. Right? and I bring this up because you have to imagine you if you're in the system, you're in our system, and we accept you as a member of the little sub flock of our flock. You have no right to then betray that trust. So, and you have to realize in that context. I mean, it's like really strong language. That's the reason why. I ask if you read it in the Hebrew press. The Hebrew press is much more harif about this issue. The English press, they just kind of mention it. Yeah. Like a thing. You know what I'm saying? The Israeli newspapers are going nuts about this thing. Because secular newspapers love Haredi on Haredi crime. They just love it. they eat it up like it's nothing. Okay, just be aware of that. So we're going to start his Hakdama and understand that there's a Hakdama Rishona, then there's a Hakdama Shnia, there's a first intro, and a second intro, and then there's a Pticha, which is an opening, but it doesn't matter. It's all the book.
It's
the same book.
Was his thought during the war...
Haskamos I'm not going to include.
Was his thought during the war influenced by those who who believed that the reason for the Holocaust was not because of the Haskalah movement, but was...
Oh, we're going to get into it. He says he'll get into it almost immediately, maybe not today, next week, what motivated, he believes, what caused the Holocaust. And as he gets into, like, really theologically questionable issues and controversial ones. He doesn't hold back. And the fascinating thing about Emma Bani Smicha reading it is, it's a tragedy. It's a really tragic story. It's very sad. It's also very moving. He raises issues that are unbelievably prophetic, literally prophetic in his vision. But he makes predictions that come true, that came true. He makes predictions 60 years ago that really happened. But he also, you sense his pain. You really very strongly feel his pain. So that's why. And in addition, he also, to a large degree, gives you an understanding. He'll give you the real strong basics of religious Zionism, the core tenets of religious Zionism, which is, it's really important to know just how fundamental religious Zionism is to Judaism, in a sense. Well, you know, it's not like this sort of thing that's climbed on. It's the real deal. And one also thing you'll notice when you read it is how much he's talking. He's not writing this book for us. And you'll see, like, as we read it, he writes the book for Hasidim, for Haredim, really. I mean, the word Haredim didn't exist back then. But he writes it for his own people, because you can see it in who he quotes and how he speaks about them. I mean, the whole book, a ton of the book, is Hasidish of Vartlach. But it's the Hasidish of Vartlach that you never knew about, like, you know, a core tenet of Judaism, of religiosity, and how Eretz Yisrael is related to it. I would just end off by saying that a chunk of this book, just from a personal view, point of view, like, this book definitely contributed to my personal aliyah. And I was a rabbi of a shul, just to tell you the story, there's a man named Joe Weiss. Joe Weiss was a sports physician, sports doctor, a very well-respected doctor in Detroit. And he actually helped build our shul building, and he invited us over for lunch. I think it was like the first year there. And when I was there, he showed me he had that book. And he had the English book, and he had underlined passages. He had really gone through a chunk of the book and really underlined important passages. It was very nice, you know, like you go to a Balabas's house, and it's lovely. Joe Weiss was, his son was learning in Shalavim. His daughter was at the same time learning in Toronto. He was going to go visit with his daughter, go visit Israel. So he was going to drive from Detroit to Toronto, which is about a four-hour drive, pick up his daughter and fly to Israel. And on the drive to Toronto, he got into a one-car car accident and was killed tragically. And it was just like the whole community, you know, you can imagine, just a young, you know, relatively young man, and it was just very shocking. And so I felt I couldn't just let it go. I had to learn something in his memory. So we had a shiur in my house, and it was maybe kind of like the shiur, you know, five, six guys. And what were we going to learn? There was nothing to learn. Like, he had loved Emunah Shleicha so much, that's what we decided to learn. And it took us maybe three, four years to get through the book. But you learn something, you know, week in and week out. Like, the Chazal tell us that Torah becomes part of you, the things that you learn, the things that you focus on, it seeps into your psyche, it seeps into who you are, which is why learning is so important. And you can't keep saying, Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, and not have it affect you. So all of you came without that, which is even more impressive. But, it's really important to have an understanding of the core of what religious Zionism is all about. And I'll get to it in a minute, just from the language he uses, it affected me, his learning, and I think hopefully it'll solidify all of you as well, and whoever happens to be listening. Okay, Hakdama Rishona on page Chav Zayin. So, and it's very important. And the reason I insist on doing it in the Hebrew, even if you have the English on the side to help you, which is quite useful, I recommend it. Is the Hebrew is poetic? There's a lot of poetry to it. Obviously, if somebody's writing a book in Hebrew, you're going to see just how brilliant he is. He borrows a lot of terminology from classic liturgy, from Judaism, as you'll soon see. So he says, "Ra'iti b'michtav shekatav Rabbeinu Baal HaTanya, the Rabbeinu miBerditcha." So the Baal HaTanya, who is the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, right? He wrote a letter to the Berditcha Rebbe. So you already know where we're going. Like, hello, welcome to Rav Teichel's world. Like, you know, I was reading a letter from the Baal HaTanya to the Berditcha Rebbe. Like, what do you read in your free time? Okay, Zchutam Tagen Aleinu b'shnat Taf Kuf Samach Bet. Okay, in the year. We're now in Tuf Shin Ayin Aleph, so that's about, how much, 190 years ago? 190 years ago. That's about right. So remember, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe Rav Zalman of Liadi was freed. He was put into prison, and he was freed. And anybody know what date he was freed on?
It just happened.
That's right. Yotet Kislev is the Hilula of the Rebbe. Now they celebrate with a lot of vodka. Vizela Shono. That's true. This is just empirically true. Vizela Shono. He says, Agida, this is what he said the Balatanya wrote to the Bridge of a Rebbe. Agida ba'adabra ba'atzmu misaper. Great, amazing things happened to me. Kifli v'higdil Hashem la'asot ba'aretz. That God did this amazing thing. Umi anochi. Shefel anashim kamon. Who am I, this lowly human being? Sheviani Hashem ad halom. That Hashem has brought me to this place. Shenitgadel benitgadei shem shemayim al yadi. That there was such a big kiddush Hashem through me. Ach me'et Hashem haitazot. But this was from God. Legalgel zchut al yadenu bizchut ha'aretz hakadosha v'yoshveha. To legalgel, to bring about, from galgilgul, to bring about this zchut to us. Right? In the merit of eretz hakadosha v'yoshveha. Right, the Holy Land and its inhabitants. He shamda lanu v'tazor lanu b'chol eit. This is what stands for us. Right, by the way, where's that from? Just allusion. Right, Pesach. He shamda lanu. Okay, that's what you have to. It's like he just throws that in. La'archiv lanu b'tzar ulechaltzenu mimeitzar. To when we are tight, to widen us, to give us like you know space to breathe, and to free us from meitzar, from stress. Ad kan dvaref etzuchim l'inyanenu. That's just the part of the letter that I'm quoting. I learned something that I never knew. He says, when a person is in trouble, what can save him? The zchut of Eretz Yisrael and its inhabitants, kasher katab befebrush, as he says explicitly, the zchut Eretz Yisrael v'yoshveha, He she'amda lanu, the merit of Eretz Yisrael and its inhabitants, that's what saved us, that stood for us. V'tazor lanu b'chol et, la'achiv lanu mitzar, u'l'chaltzenu mimitzar, ad kan l'shono. Haray, he she'amda lanu, that's what saved him from, what got him out of that Russian prison?
The tefillahs from...
No.
From
did not say the tefillahs of Eretz Yisrael.
The
schut of Eretz Yisrael... And its inhabitants.
Which occurred during that period of time?
Yeah, well, whatever. No, the zchut of Eretz Yisrael. What zchut, that raises the question, what zchut does Eretz Yisrael have? When you say Eretz Yisrael has a zchut, what does that mean? Eretz Yisrael has a zchut?
It has a role, it has a specialness, it has a fondness for Hashem.
What did you say?
It's a special role.
Yeah.
And it's a special fondness to Hashem.
What's that? You didn't say that. You said it has a special fondness for Hashem.
For Hashem.
What's the difference between those two things? They're very fundamental, which is... How can a land have a zchut? That's the question, right? Why is it a question?
It's a personification.
Correct. It's a personification. A land is a thing. It's a place. It's a geographical entity. How could it have a zchut? Except when you read, we're gonna see this a little bit. Especially when you read some of the writings of Rav Kook, you will see. Anybody ever see the first Star Trek: Next Generation? Anyone here else have Star Trek now? No, a little bit, right? Yeah. So you know how they like ran come to this place called Farpoint, right? Mm-hmm. And it turns out what's the sequence of Farpoint?
That's alive.
That's alive. Very good. Somebody finally gets my references. Okay, that's the whole Yesod. That in more, how shall we say this, more Rav Kookian, and in that I mean Hasidish, and in that I mean Kabbalistic sources, Eretz Yisrael is alive, without a doubt. Right? And you don't need Kabbalistic sources. Do you have a Chumash? Can I borrow a Chumash for a second? Okay, you don't need Kabbalistic sources for this.
Rav Kook referred to it very, very much like this.
Right.
That it was a living essence.
Yes. It's a living, breathing entity. Very much not like Farpoint Station, but, you know, like, you know. That and it's hard for us to believe. What? Okay. Says, and this is actually, if you think about it, it's explicit in the Torah. I'm reading from Achorimot, Perek Yitzvayikra Yudchet Chavdalet. Al titam u b'chol eile, do not commit all these sexual perversions. Ki b'chol eile nitmu ha-goyim asher ani mishaleach mipneihem. Because all of the goyim, all of the nations that I'm kicking out in front of you, they did these things. Vatitma ha'aretz, and the land became defiled. Va'afkod avona aleha, and I counted her sins upon her. On who?
On the land.
Alav, on it, or aleha.
Right.
Okay. Vataki ha'aretz et yoshveha. What did the land do?
It spit it out.
It didn't spit it out.
Threw it up.
It vomited it out. Okay, those are very different things. Spit is something you do voluntarily because you have a bad taste in your mouth. Vomiting is something your body does involuntarily because it cannot take whatever it is you stuff down it. Okay? Ushmartem atem et chukotai bet mishpatai. You should guard my commandments. V'lo tasu b'chol ha'tovot ha'ile. Don't do these things. Ha'ezrach ve'ager ha'gar b'tochem. Why? Ki et kol ha'tovot te'el asu anshei ha'aretz asher lifneichem. Because people who came before you did this. V'titma ha'aretz. And the land became defiled. And if you don't do these things, if you actually remain pure. V'lo taki ha'aretz etchem b'tamachem otah. Ka'asher ka'a et hagoy asher lifneichem. And the land shall not vomit you out like it vomited out the people before you. Right? What does that sound like? If you had it in your mind, your spiritual behavior. I have in this mind, I have this kind of like an amoeba cell. You know what I'm saying? It's like this living organism. I would say it's a human being, but it's a living organism that's sensitive to spiritual reality. And if a certain spiritual impurity enters into its midst, it's going to expel it. It's going to kick you out. That is not a land. That is not the language you would use to describe a land. It's what you would use to describe an organism. Except this is not like, some nutty Rav Kookian saying this. This is Moshe Rabbeinu in Vayikra. You know what I'm saying? So like, when he talks about, the Eretz Yisrael has a zchut. The zchut of Eretz Yisrael. Well, what is Eretz Yisrael? It's just a place. No. Not a place. It's an entity. It's an entity of holiness. And it has an identity, and it has qualities, it has reactions. It's I don't know how you want to describe it. It's alive.
So why does it like have
Yoshveha?
What?
So why
does he have Yoshveha?
Because that's our responsibility.
Yeah, without a doubt. The zchut of the people that dwell there is also a thing. But that zchut is also of the Eretz itself. Okay, I want to hold on a second.
When the two unite, it's when the geula takes place.
When what two unite? Eretz Yisrael and Yoshveha.
Right. When the nation that is supposed to be Yoshveha and Eretz Yisrael is in its proper spiritual mode. That's when the geula takes place.
Okay, he's going to talk about the geula.
Right.
Yeah, okay. We'll get there without a doubt.
No, I mean, Rav Kook speaks of. I mean, like I'm very like into
the Rav Kook stuff.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, remember he's writing at the same time really as Rav Kook,
right. The
heavy stuff in Rav Kook. I want to point out something interesting that in the language that he uses. If you look in the third line of the second paragraph, the second line. Okay, how does he describe a Jew? What language does he use?
Adam
ha-Yisraeli. How would you describe, or how would you expect him to describe a Jewish person? Right. So what would you say?
Ish
Yehudi. What's the difference between an Ish Yehudi and Adam ha-Yisraeli?
One belongs to the land.
Before there is such a thing as a two-dot-hazahut. What does it mean to call somebody an Adam ha-Yisraeli?
One who identifies entirely.
This cannot be good. No, that's my son. Okay. He's practicing babysitting for the first time. That's not going to be good. Hopefully he'll call his mother. Okay?
You can take it if you'd like.
Nah, it's okay. He'll survive. I hope.
Yeah, Adam Yisraeli is a person who is totally invested in that he identifies himself entirely with the land that he is living in.
Really? When Rav Teichler writes this in 1940?
I think it's more of a nationalistic association than a religious association.
Correct. Very good. And it's critical to realize that Rav Kook does use that language of Adam Yisraeli a lot.
Right.
But in most rabbinic writings, you don't see Adam Yisraeli.
You almost never see it.
Correct. You see Ish Yehudi, right. You see whatever. You almost never see it. And Adam HaYisraeli identifies himself as a member of a nation as opposed to an Ish Yehudi who identifies himself as...
It's one of the reasons why
a religion.
The Haredi in general thought that's one of the reasons why they thought Rav Kook had gone off the deep end with Eretz Yisrael, that he was a Talmud Chacham, but in that respect, he totally lost himself.
Yeah, right. Anything you don't agree with, you kind of lost himself.
Right. No. But this is the reason, because no one ever before...
That's not true.
Had used such terminology.
But that's exactly the point. Right? Rav Teichler didn't get it from Rav Kook.
No, I understand
There's a movement, and his point is going to be to prove that this movement is nothing new. This movement has been here for centuries, generations. It's always... We had gotten away, and this is exactly the point, that Judaism had abandoned what it meant to be a Jew. The Jewish people became a Jewish people, they became a Jewish nation first. Right? Am Yisrael became Am Yisrael first, and only then, when they got to Har Sinai, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them the Torah. But when the Jewish people, let me finish my point. When the Jewish people got kicked out of Eretz Yisrael, when they went into the Gola, what then identify the Jewish people? What identifies you as a cohesive unit?
Right? Your nationality.
No, not at all.
Your nationality.
Well, okay, let's just break it down. What are, would you say, are the definitive qualities of a nation?
You have a flag, you have a
flag, country, army, flag, army, land, nationality, army.
Religion.
In a country?
Yeah. That's integral.
What's
to
the national religion of the country you came from?
Christian.
Really?
Sure. America isn't a Christian country.
All right.
It's a Judeo-Christian country.
Okay.
It is not.
I've got land. I've got land. I've got flag. I've got... What else do we have?
Culture.
Very good. There's one big
language.
One. Language. Language is a huge one. All right. What makes the French people French, other than the fact that they're French? Right? They speak French. They're in France. They have common laws. Right? They have a culture. Right? When you kicked the Jews out of Eretz Yisrael, they had no army, they had no country, they had no government, they had no land, and they had no nationality. What's left?
Your religion.
That's it.
Right.
Correct. That's all. That's what kept us going.
Right.
Except, interestingly enough, Chazal had the foresight, and they realized that what kept us going isn't just the Torah. It wasn't enough. But it had to be a yearning for the return of a nationality. You ever noticed how entrenched Israel is in our tefillot, in the Golat tefillot? How many times do you mention Israel in Shemona Esrei, in Shema, in tefillah? How many times? Like, ridiculous amount of times. What's it doing in benching?
But at the same time, at the point when Vespasian met with Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, right? So at that point, the concept of nationality was then moved away.
Right. Why?
On purpose.
What did the Gemara say about what did the Gemara say about Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai asked for? He asked for Yaakov and Chachamim. What did the Gemara say?
He couldn't ask for Jerusalem. It was too much.
No, they said he thought that he couldn't, but he should have.
Yeah.
Right. The Gemara criticizes him for not asking for it. He could have had anything he wanted. Ask for Yerushalayim.
He's got three wishes.
Right.
But ultimately, the result of that one episode led us to where we were holding before World War II.
Hold on a second. Let's go back to, like, to take for example the Chorban Bayit Rishon. The Jews get kicked out of Eretz Yisrael. They get sent to Babel. They get sent to Paras. What's the whole Purim story? What's the essence of the Purim story? You read it. You have to read it in this context. The essence of the Purim story is: what did the Jewish people do at Achashverosh's party?
They
party. Why did they party at his party?
He was forcing them.
Nah, he invited them to the whole. No, they went to his party. The whole underlying story of the party. Why?
The time had ended, and now it's vice.
Therefore, and what happened? What's he celebrating?
He was celebrating the fact that it wasn't that it hadn't come.
How did Jews go to that party? How could Jews go to that party? Nobody said they were forced to go to the party. It said v'chol am v'am, right? And nobody forced them. The answer was when you kick the Jew out of Israel. Can you imagine, like? Okay, you're America, right? What would happen if the Russians came, or now it's going to be the Chinese, and they come and they invade us, and all the Americans get exiled to Canada? Okay? So now, would you still have Thanksgiving dinner?
I had it last... the 26th.
No, but you're still American. Now there is no
I'm
more America.
I'm Israeli.
There is no more America.
Right.
Would you still have... What would Thanksgiving dinner be? It's like a joke. It's like a sad remembrance of the celebration you used to have.
Correct.
Would you send up fireworks on July 4th?
No. Okay.
Right. So understand meaning. What?
So that's exactly what I was saying. From the time that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made that request, that was the beginning of the end of
nationalistic Judaism. But what's it supposed to be?
And it took until the time of the Gra for it to be reestablished.
What's it supposed to be, though, in its essence? Is nationalistic Judaism a perverted view of what Judaism is? Or is it really the essential view of what Judaism is? And religious Judaism only is a shadow of what Judaism is supposed
to
be.
That is exactly right.
This is my question. When he talks about Adam Yisraeli, is he assuming that every Adam Yisraeli is an Ish Yehudi plus?
Oh, yeah. But you cannot have Israeli without religion.
Right.
Without a doubt.
He's writing this in the Holocaust, and people are being killed because they're Jews.
Correct.
And not because they're practicing the Jewish religion necessarily.
Right.
Not a lot of people are Jews, but not necessarily practicing.
Right.
So Jew kind of became broadened, at least but under the Nazis, is beyond a religion to some sort of like people.
Yes, correct.
I don't know if we call it a full-blown nationality, but it's sort of like an ethnic group or a people that may be religious or may not, but it was sort of like this people.
Isn't it? There's a certain irony in that no matter how much we abandon our Judaism or who we are, right? You know, the Kadosh Baruch Hu or whatever, the forces of nature always come back to remind us that you might not act like a Jew, but sooner or later someone's going to remind you that you are one.
Right.
But that's the, you know, what?
It's not only that, it's that we had forgotten so much of the concept of nationality that they reminded us, the Holocaust reminded us that we were a nationality.
Well, we're going to get into the Holocaust.
It didn't matter where.
The Holocaust is a very, very fertile minefield for theological danger.
Right?
And I'm not, Tetzel will take steps that I personally would never take, but he's the right to say whatever he wants, since he was in it. And so just this notion of this Adam Yisraeli, focusing on that language, it's a huge jump to take. Because until that point, religious Judaism, I just have to go back a little bit historically, religious Judaism had associated itself with Jewish identity, with Torah observance, right? And remember and understand what was going on in Europe, especially Western Europe at the time, mostly Eastern Europe, vis-a-vis Jewish identity. What was happening in the late 1800s and early 1900s? You're talking about
the Skull movement
was only a symbol, really,
right,
of the broader movement of people doing what in order to identify as Jews?
They were assimilating.
Well, they were abandoning traditional Judaism. See, here's what's interesting. People did not want to they couldn't be non-Jews. Right? They were assimilating, but they wanted to find ways to channel their Judaism. So some of them found communism, some of them found socialism, some of them, you know what I'm saying, all these Jewish guilds of Yiddishism, of like, you know, like there was incredibly rich Jewish life with people trying to find Jewish meaning, not in the context of sitting in yeshiva and learning, or, you know, being from. So along came this movement called Zionism, and they said something unbelievable. They said you could fully express your Judaism, and at the same time completely reject the Torah. And you can imagine what the Rabbanim had to say about that.
Right.
Yeah, Zionism, it was never considered, especially at the very beginning, it was viewed as an alternative to traditional Judaism. Right? You know, we're beat upon, we're spit upon, we get killed in the pogroms. Right? That's not what it means to be a Jew. What does it really mean to be a Jew? It means, you know, identifying yourself as a Jewish nationality, building up the land of Israel, expressing yourself. And Dreyfus came along and it really grew after that. The dream of the homeland, et cetera, et cetera. This idea of Zionism was really an expression of I was clearly not only that, but it was also an expression of anti-religiosity. Just a strong expression, right? So how would any Rav feel about that? Any Torah religious personality would feel about it. A, threatened. And if you see the language that they use, they really use, they viewed Zionism as almost like cardinal sin. Like, to be a Zionist was like, and I'm not talking about only Haredim. I'm talking about like a lot of mainstream Judaism, like, you know, not the Satmar only, but a lot of the yeshiva world saw Zionism as antithetical to a Jewish way of life. And there were very, very, very few unique Rabbanim who said, we're kind of missing the boat here. It's not
right,
either
because
or.
Because of the extreme that the Rabbanim went in order to ensure that none of their Talmidim and family members and etc. became quote-unquote Zionists,
right.
They also, as a result, threw out the entire concept
correct.
of Adam Yisraeli.
Adam Yisraeli, correct. But we don't preach either or. Obviously, I mean, like, you know, this is a lot of the things. We believe that they go hand in hand. It's also, they're all core beliefs, that it all goes together. That you can't have one or the other. There is no such thing as an Isha Yisraeli without the Torah. And a person who only keeps the Torah but doesn't identify as an Isha Yisraeli is really missing the boat. You know, it's almost like, I don't know if you've all had this experience, like you're trying to, like, almost. I don't feel it's productive to try to convince people to make aliyah. Like I once had a student from Orot. These are good girls. I gave her a Tremp home. I often give Tremps home. And it's always like interesting sometimes conversations. So she says, oh, you're a rab? Tell me, I have cousins who live in Passaic. So those who know the United States know.
I am from Passaic.
Passaic offers a very rich Jewish life.
Yes, it does.
Okay. She says to me, she says they're like they seem really nice people and they're very religious and they're Torah oriented people. She says, how do I convince them? Like, how do I convince them that they should be living in Israel? And the funny thing was, she herself, who lives in Efrat or whatever, a very wonderful religious girl, she didn't know the answer to the question. And I said, like, imagine you were trying to convince someone who's colorblind that he should undergo surgery in order to restore his sight to see colors. You say to them, yeah, but it's purple. And they say, looks fine to me. No, but it's beautiful, this color, the way it shines and the light and the red and the... Is my life diminished in any way? With someone who can't see color...
It's not only that. It's not that they don't realize that they're missing something. It's that they are still being person that lived in Passaic. There are individuals within the community that are pro Zionism, religious Zionism,
sure.
but primarily the community is a brisk community,
but again, so you
with
said,
an ideology that is antithesis to Zionism.
Someone who has a Torah ideology. If you identify yourself, yeah, I'm a Torah Jew. So what do I need this whole Yisraeli thing? What am I missing if I'm not a Yisraeli? I'm a Jew.
Right.
It's hard to explain to somebody, but you express your Judaism and through the Jewish nation, and the Jewish nation is that much broader and so much richer and so much more. It offers so much more, and it's the ideal of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to be. Yeah, but I'm a Jew. Go have that argument. You know what I'm saying? It's something that you have to learn and study and understand. And that's all hidden in that one word, Aisha Yisraeli. And if you're sensitive to it and you see it, then you see all the issues that are hidden in it. And you have to understand how loaded that is. So now Rav Teichel has to now convince us just how important the Balatanya was. So he says, Ukvar ha'ido rabosha maran Balatanya, harav rabinu kadosh rabber zichroni yagin aleinu, mi mezavuzal b'tzavato shakav zavonei wrote in his will, Ki chachmato, the wisdom of the Balatanya, uminato v'da'ato, heim ad ein cheker. V'shakul da'ato harishon hi nevuah ktana. Shikul da'ato. His logic is like nevuah. Okay, so he says, if you doubted who the Balatanya was when he wrote this letter to the Berdivitcher Rebbe, I'm telling you, the Balatanya was the cat's meow. V'ach mutar lehabia l'saper ad yulat Rabbeinu Balatanya. You need me to tell you who the Balatanya was? See, like, by the way, is he writing this for us? Like, he's writing me, like, is it an introduction? Let me tell you, the Balatanya, Balatanya, oh my God, you know what I'm saying? Okay, whatever, like, I'm not into it, but, you know what I'm saying? Like, you just get a flavor of who he's writing to. But this Karte Gudulato, the reason I'm telling you how great he is, Rakhli Inyan Hadavar Chadash Lamarti Midrab Kedoshim. Just to tell you the amazing thing I learned from his words. And I didn't see it in Chazal anywhere else. That the merit of Eretz Yisrael protects us. Like, I didn't see it anywhere else. But he's the Tabalatanya. Like, it's so interesting. He says, like, he is like, he holds of the Rabbanim, he holds of the Rebbes. The Baal Tanya wrote this. And he's like, he says, ah, well, it wasn't just a line in a letter. It was his theology. When I looked at the Sfarim, he says, I looked into it and then I found. And this appears in Bachar Chukotai. It says, V'zacharti et b'riti Yaakov, v'av et b'riti Yitzchak, v'av et b'riti Avraham eskor, v'aretz eskor. Where is this, by the way? When he says, I will remember the brit, the covenant of Yaakov, and then the covenant of Yitzchak, and then the covenant of Avraham, and then I'll remember the Aretz. Where's that from?
Tochacha,
right. After all the terrible, terrible things that will happen to you. He says, the Hashem says, I will remember Yaakov, Yitzchak, Avraham, and the Aretz. So the rabbi said, Ma inya ha'aretz l'kan. What in the world does it have to do with Eretz Yisrael? Ayin sham mashar manu b'zeh. But he says, according to what he said, the Tabala Tanya said, it makes very perfect sense. Ki ayin b'Rashi, shekatav. Rashi says, lama nimnu achoranit. You look at the pasuk. What's interesting about the pasuk? And what's interesting about the pasuk? Va'afet b'ti. Let's look again. Tzchati b'ti Yaakov. Va'afet b'ti Yitzchak. Va'afet b'ti Avraham iskor. Va'aretz iskor. So what's unique? What would you comment about that pasuk that seems unusual?
Obviously, it's the. You're taking three, you know, our forefathers,
right.
And stating the covenant that they had with them.
Right.
You don't state any covenant that you had with the land.
Okay, well, you want to have me focusing on the land. Before you read before you get to the Aretz, what's interesting about the Pasuk? Doesn't strike you as interesting?
What are you saying? It's the opposite order.
It's backwards.
You say Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov.
Right, you say Avraham, Avid, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Why does it say Yaakov, Yitzchak, and Avraham? That's what Rashi points out. So Rashi says, Klamar, Kedayu Yaakov HaKatan Lekach. Yaakov is like the small guy. He should be enough to get the zchut. And if he's not enough, then I'll throw in Yitzchak. And if he can't get the deal done with Yitzchak to save the Jews, he says, but Rashi, that's the end of the Rashi. What Rashi doesn't add is, what's the next step? And based on the apizeh yeshal hosif, I'm going to add. If none of them could get the job done to get the Jews out of trouble, what is he describing? A situation where the zchut avot is not protecting us. No. What's he describing? Name a situation where it's so bad that zchut avot can't be working. Yeah, he's describing an Holocaust, right? He's like, he's writing without saying it about his situation. If things were so bad, aval v'haaretz iskor. And Hashem says, I'll remember the land. That the merit of the land of Israel will free us from this meitzar, from this suffering. There's a source in the Torah. It's better than Abraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov, somehow, to protect us. Even more than Avot. And even if zchut avot doesn't help, he tagenu lechasenu mitzar b'chol eit she'anu nutunim b'tzara rachmana litzlan. I.e. at any time, i.e.
Right now.
We need help. Yes. Yes.
Why don't we... it's amazing, but... I never thought of this, but... why don't we... I mean, we're accustomed to asking for help and in the name of Zchus Avos, but we don't say, for example, in Shmoneh Esrei, we don't ask for Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, Elokei Yisrael.
Elokei Eretz Yisrael?
Right, like so, why not? Why don't we ask, why isn't that in...
Why don't we ask the land?
Why don't we ask Hashem for merit?
Right.
We ask for zchus avos, or we ask bizchus avos, but we don't ask. We're not knowing to ask bizchus Eretz Yisrael.
Right.
Why?
Maybe because he's mechadesh this. He's making. I don't know.
Interestingly enough.
Although he says that it works, that's what happens. The zchut is there. the merit of the land. Now, I mean, if you want to get into the functioning of how does it work, that I can understand how Zchut Avraham works. Avraham Avinu, he built up like these brownie points, you know, like he got close to Hashem, and Hashem really likes Avraham, you know, and therefore, I always thought of it this way, you know, like you ever, the way I always understood the beginning of Shemoneh Esrei is like this. Like if you go to the bank, you know, and you ask the officer for a loan, and he said, you know, can you give me $50,000? And he says, who are you? And you say, who am I? I'm Reuben Schwalter from Yad Binyamin. It's very nice, but who are you? Okay, very good. That's one answer. You get a certain answer. You walk in and you say, oh, Reuben Schwalter, yeah, from where? Well, I'm really from Detroit, but my grandfather was some little shtetl in, you know, Poland. You ever heard of Faslavishlav? And he goes, you're kidding, Faslavishlav. My grandfather lived in Faslavishlav. You know, and you're schmoozing, and it's so great. And it turns out that your grandfather got his grandfather out of the shtetl right before the Holocaust. Okay, oh, by the way, I need $50,000. Done. What do you mean? I'm the same guy. Because my grandfather helped your grandfather, and now you're going to give me the money? What's the answer?
Yeah.
Of course. Right. Okay, Avraham, okay, Yitzchak, okay, Yaakov, Kadosh Baruch Hu. Remember my grandfather, my great Zaidi? Oh, him? Yeah, by the way, can you make it rain? You know, but you know what I'm saying? So that's the way I always understood Zchut Avot.
Right.
Right. It works for me, but what do you do in Eretz Yisrael? Like, again, we're struggling with this. What do you mean, Eretz Yisrael? What did you do?
Right.
I don't know. It's a good question. How does it work? How does the functioning of Eretz Yisrael work as a zchut?
Yeah.
No idea. Yeah. But it's there. It's clearly in the liturgy. Okay, I want to get a little bit, because he gets into it a little bit, and then we'll... How am I doing time-wise? I keep getting calls from my son. That's not so good. I got 10 minutes? Is that sound right?
10 minutes, half an hour now. Go for it.
No, this is not that kind of guy. Hello, Matzati od Mechilta Parshat Vashalach. By the way, the interesting thing is, he says, I found it in another midrash. Pasuk Matzitzake Lai Deber Bnei Yisrael V'Yisau. So the Jewish people are again in big trouble. Right? The Egyptians are coming. The Yamsuf is blocking. They're screaming. Moshe Rabbeinu turns to God and says, what the heck? Right? So Hashem says, Matzitzake Lai. What are you fetching to me for? Tell him to go. Like Moshe Rabbeinu is like, go where? You know, go, there's water. What are you supposed to do? So Rabbi Shmuel Omer, B'zchut Yerushalayim, Ani Korea Lehem Etayam. So he said, Rabbi Shmuel says, why did Kadosh Baruch Hu split the sea? For the merit of Yerushalayim, Ayin Sham. Hare, Da'yu Be'etzara. B'zchut Yerushalayim Amda Lehem. And obviously Yerushalayim, the problem with the Midrash is, Yerushalayim did not yet exist.
Yerushalayim.
Right. So what does it mean, B'zchut Yerushalayim? I think it means the potential of Yerushalayim, the representation of what Yerushalayim is supposed to be.
But Bnei Yisrael weren't even at that point yet.
Correct. The future of Yerushalayim. God saw in his infinite dominion over the space-time continuum that there would be a Yerushalayim, and Yerushalayim would provide a source of light and spirituality for the world, I guess.
But even if it wasn't by name, it's always been the point of connection.
What do you mean?
Every Avos went back to Yerushalayim.
Right. There was a place. Correct. Yeah. Correct. But he says,
not even in terms of physicality, it was the closest point to Kodesh Baruch. Every time they needed the ultimate connection, they went to that physical location for the ultimate spiritual.
Correct. He says, "Who pella? This is a wonder. Ma'in in Yerushalayim mahata. What's connection to Yerushalayim for that? Who had the Vashni Bela Rabbeinu Balatanya now? This is what the Baal Tanya was talking about. Dischut Eretz Yisrael omedet lanu bechol eitz anu b'tzara lechaltenu mimeitar. You're in trouble? Call on the Dischut of Eretz Yisrael. Ukvar yadua michazal b'midrash, dilifamim nikreit Eretz Yisrael b'shem Yerushalayim. Dihimer kaz Eretz Yisrael. They didn't really mean Yerushalayim. What did they really mean? They meant Eretz Yisrael. So why did it say Yerushalayim? Well, because sometimes Eretz Yisrael is called Yerushalayim. How do you like his drasha? Right, it doesn't need you so much, but okay. Chene b'midrash anelam b'zohar parshat vayera, d'chol eretz yidra b'chal Yerushalayim hi. Eretz Yisrael is also like a part of Yerushalayim, etc. Hare, t'divrei rabbeinu balatanya mevu'arim b'torah b'mikram b'farash u'b'midrash chazal. I gave you a Torah, I gave you a midrash, I gave you another midrash. U'dvarav amitiyim k'moshe m'pi agvura. I'm telling you, it's true. It's totally true. Believe me, please, I beg you. V'ho'il shekein, since this is true, we are in big trouble. right? The pain, the troubles, they are, how does he translate it? Compiling on our necks, they are compounding on our necks. Umitchadshot lo rak miyom liyom ela misha'a l'sha'a. Not every day that they come up with something new, it's every hour. Imamati l'saper lo yaspiku lanu hagilyonot. If I tried to tell you the stories, I wouldn't have enough notebooks. What is that an allusion to? Anybody know? Any reference? Sounds like?
Some nishma,
but nishma is also an allusion to something, I don't know if you recall. Anybody ever read? Every Shavuot morning, before we read the Torah, we read something called?
We're all half asleep.
Right, we're all like nodding through Akdamut, and all you know is that every word ends with ta. Right, so one of the themes of Akdamut is, if you had to sing the praises, write the praises of God, is if you took all, if the whole world, if the whole sea were ink, and all the something were oceans, and all the skies were quills, right, and you still couldn't write all the praises of God. So he says, if I wouldn't have enough paper to write all the things that are going on. This is not a book of history. You want to tell the story? They're going to be historians. The essence for me is to remember that we are in tzara. There is no day that's not worse than the day before. Okay, and therefore, we need Eretz Yisrael. L'hagen aleinu, to protect us, u'l'shamreinu, to guard us, u'l'achiv lanu mitzar, u'l'chatzenu mimeitzar. In whose language is he borrowing? So look, you can put it in quotes. U'l'achiv lanu mitzar, u'l'chatzenu mimeitzar. He's quoting the exact language of u'l'achiv lanu mitzar, u'l'chatzenu mimeitzar that the Baal HaTani quoted. He's like, he said Eretz Yisrael works. Let's go. I need Eretz Yisrael now. It's really, really bad. That's the end of a section. We're going to get to it. We'll get to it next time. So he says, basically, we're in big trouble. Everything's really bad. The Baal HaTanya said, we need Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael needs to protect us. I will invoke the zchut of Eretz Yisrael in order to protect us from trouble and difficulty. And God willing, as we'll soon see, he'll say, God willing, Eretz Yisrael will protect us. And we'll bring us out of this terrible hell in which we find ourselves. And one wonders like what else did he have to turn to? But as we'll see, his theology clearly has changed, and his view on things have changed quite a bit. And he uses this prism of Eretz Yisrael as a way of seeing everything that's happening to the Jewish people in Europe, and also seeing a way forward for them to try to get themselves out of trouble, not only just metaphysically, but physically as well. Okay? So we'll stop here. Sure.